There is a retraction, or at least a correction, forthcoming. This is the Faith Debate on News Radio 930 WFMD. I am Troy Skinner, pastor of Household of Faith in Christ, online at householdoffaithinchrist.com. Joined this week again by Daniel Razvi and Imran Razvi, also known as Daniel's father or Daniel's dad. I forget what he said, which one of those he he said one of those two.
Daniel's father.
So we are not infallible. We actually do make mistakes every now and then. That's what you're getting to, right?
Yeah.
Speak
for yourself. No, actually, I'm speaking of myself.
Unlike God, who is infallible.
Yeah.
We do make mistakes.
So anyway, you can find the Razvis online at conqueredbylove.org, and they co-pastor a church that's called the church that meets at Imran's house, or the church that meets at Daniel's father's house. Maybe that'd be a...
we should rename that.
Or the Razvis house.
That'll be a fun name for a church. I would beg all sorts of questions. Anyway, so it was last week or the week before, I forget which show now, because we record these shows kind of in bunches, and so they all blend together. But I was railing against...
It was last week.
Was it last week's show? I was railing against the Defense of Marriage Act, and I was using mental shorthand, and I wasn't being as careful and precise as I should be. So in 1996, if memory serves, the Defense of Marriage Act, the DOMA, as it was has been called, was passed just during the Clinton years. And then during the Obama years, there was a big Supreme Court decision.
Obergefell.
The Obergefell decision, and it was 2013, 2014?
2013.
Mm-hmm. And so they ruled a key portion of that act unconstitutional. And so you couldn't, quote unquote, discriminate against people who weren't really married who said they were. That's right. Basically, so they gutted the key thing in the act.
Right. So what you were trying to say, the Defense of Marriage Act was actually, by and large, a good law.
Initially.
But the court decision that overruled that was a bad court decision. Defense of Marriage Act itself is actually a good law.
But they didn't rule the whole, and I'm not a legal expert. This is more your bailiwick, right? Because you went to law school and all that sort of stuff. But my understanding is that the Supreme Court did not strike down the entire act. They just took one provision and said, that's unconstitutional. So now we're left with a Defense of Marriage Act that is actually law that in a sense now forces people to recognize two men or two women who say they're married to one another. As so since that decision in 2013, mm-hmm. the Defense of Marriage Act has, we'd be better off for not having it. That's kind of how I understand the legalities of that. And that's what I was railing against. A post Obergefell reality is what I was railing against,
right.
Not what was passed back during the Newt Gingrich Congress and the Bill Clinton presidency.
Right.
How the world has changed, right? Bill Clinton signed that.
Yeah, well, I mean, even Obama, the first time, ran on a traditional marriage platform.
Yeah.
Right? So we were talking about, what are some of the marks of a good church, and one of the most important things you should find out is not only does your church have a gay pastor, because that's pretty easy to find out. You don't even have to ask them. You can probably look on their website and figure that out. But would they be opposed to having a gay pastor or lesbian pastor, or would they be happy to call somebody a Christian who is in a homosexual relationship that is open and not repentant of that?
So if a person is thinking about joining a church and they've done some due diligence, but they still have got some questions, and one of them is this, the website doesn't seem to say a lot about marriage. They visited a handful of times and marriage hasn't come up yet, and so they want to make sure, they want to check that box. So they say, Mr. Pastor, sir, glad to meet you. Well, how would you define marriage? What kind of answer should they be hoping to hear?
Marriage is a covenant before God for a lifetime commitment between one man and one woman to raise a family together. It should be pretty simple.
So one man, one woman. So it can't be two men and two women.
Right.
No, it can't be two women and one man. No sister wives.
It's no longer marriage. Now you can call it something else. You can call it whatever you want to call it. But it's not a marriage. God called marriage between male and female, one man, one woman.
And so then you get into the question about polygamy and so on, and there is certainly biblical cases.
Or even bestiality, right? Why not a human and a beast?
Well, bestiality is a little bit separate from polygamy, because bestiality is specifically condemned in all cases in the Bible. There are some things like divorce and polygamy that are you could argue are not explicitly condemned by the Bible in certain circumstances. It's just shown that it's every circumstance that is ever given an example in the Bible turns out bad.
Yeah,
and Jesus himself said God's original plan was one man and one woman, not multiple women.
Yeah, so, I think the ideal is clear. The ideal is put forward clearly, but then when people deviate from that ideal, what is that? And yeah, I think implicitly, like you said, you can trace it out. If you doubt what Daniel just said, take the time, find out who had multiple wives, and then look at how those multiple relationships affected their progeny, their lives, their wealth, their success in life. It's always bad. There's every time.
Not a single example
every
of good.
Every single time.
Yep. And including divorce, too. The divorce as well. And that's why Jesus was trying to clarify, look, you know, there may be certain circumstances where divorce happens, but that's not God's plan. So a pastor could give a somewhat nuanced explanation of divorce, or maybe even, you know, that polygamy thing which we just talked about, but it should end up with, well, God's plan is for one man and one woman. That's the thing. There is no nuanced explanation of homosexuality or bestiality.
What about a woman who wants to marry a building? That's happened, by the way.
Well, that would be...
I'm making that up.
That's more of a mental illness.
Fall within that definition. It's mental illness, yeah.
No, she identifies as somewhere on that spectrum of 57
so
genders.
Identifies is the problem, right? Right. Yeah. So you don't get to identify who
you are. Well, who gets to do...
God gets to identify who you are.
God gets to? What?
God created you. And again, your pastor should be able to have a quick, easy answer for this, that marriage is a man and a woman. There is no other marriage, and they're not... If you're living together and you're not married, you know, some people say, well, that's kind of the same thing. It's a man and a woman, right?
But what if somebody who's, you know, got the plumbing, I'm trying to figure out how to keep this G-rated, got the plumbing of what we would identify as a man, says he's a woman. Doesn't he qualify as a woman?
No.
No, he's got a mental illness and should be treated as such.
So what's a woman? There was a documentary about that you might want to watch, too.
Yes.
As you said, the plumbing and the genetics proclaim what a woman is and what a man is. It's very simple. There's no argument. There's no guesswork. It's clear and simple.
It's based on biology, and it's pretty obvious. There's only two types of people. There's men and there's women.
And even beyond that, you know, there are practical living out life things that are the purpose of a woman, or the call on women's lives. There's something about femininity that is unique to femininity, right? And there's something about masculinity that's unique to masculinity. Like, unique, at least more heavily emphasized. Like, men are to be providers, or to go be conquerors, right?
Protectors
and that's what we're, you know. And women are nurturers and helpmates. They're to help their husbands, if they're married, to take over the world. Right? So they have roles. So it's not just that they're plumbing, but then there are things that God expects.
You mean gender is not a social construct?
There are things that...
It's a biblical construct, not a social construct. It's a biblical construct, right? So the gender roles are commanded by God. And yes, so your pastor and your church should be teaching what are the proper roles that God has commanded for men and women. But... various men or women may feel more or less masculine or feminine, but it's still very clear that it is a woman and it's a man, right? Because there are some of those roles can certainly overlap in certain areas. And, you know, maybe you have a widow, and now she's kind of have to provide for her family also, not just even though the husband's job is to provide. So sometimes some of those roles can overlap slightly. But you don't want to usurp the role and take over the role that somebody else is supposed to be providing. So that's something that should be taught in the church. But just at this basic level, if your pastor can't determine very easily what's a woman or a man, then, you know, that's...
Did you see that clip? It wasn't too long ago. Riley Gaines is a very accomplished collegiate swimmer. I think she was, like, maybe the best female swimmer in the country. And then she was so good, in fact, that...
She tied
the male swimmer.
Right.
Right? That's how good she is.
Well, this was a very slow male swimmer, but just to be clear. He would have been way last place in the men's competition.
Oh, yeah, compared to men.
Right.
But he was good enough that he was winning all the competitions against the women because he's a man. He's blown him out of the water, and yet he didn't blow her out of the water. That's how good she is. So she's this rare woman that's good enough to tie the, like, 550th ranked male swimmer in the country, right?
Right.
So that's how... But anyway, because of politics and virtue signaling, all that sort of stuff, he got the win. Like, he was awarded the accolades. He was up on the stage as the winner. Even though she tied, she wasn't treated like the winner. So, anyways, but did you see the clip with her? She was speaking before some government talking head, pinhead guy somewhere, I don't know where. And he actually asked her in, like, a hearing, a public hearing, well, Miss Gaines, do you have any studies or documented evidence that, individuals that are born male have any sort of a advantage over women in an athletic contest? Are you kidding me? You need studies for this?
Right. There's studies that have been throughout.
Well, there are studies, but yeah. Do you even need them?
No, it's just, if you open your eyes, there's just evidence right in front of your eyes.
Look, the bone structure is bigger, the bone density is stronger, the muscle mass is more.
They're taller.
The wingspan, for a swimmer, the wingspan is hugely important. The men have longer arms, they have a longer leg kick. I mean, there are so many things that are built, even if
but
they
you
put
know
on testosterone blockers and that sort of stuff, mm-hmm. they still have the infrastructure. You know, they're using... E87 octane gas as opposed to E93 octane gas because they're limiting their testosterone, but it's still a muscle car.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Anyway, right. You were about to say something, Daniel?
But it doesn't even matter. Even if you're able to show that somehow they're equal in power and strength and whatever, who cares? God said there's different roles for men and women, and they should be treated differently. And men marry women, they don't marry other men, right? Because it wouldn't be marriage.
Yeah,
and our culture—it's
an issue of. I mean,
our culture,
generically
is the first...
speaking, is an issue of fairness, though, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, these poor—I mm-hmm. can't help but call these young women girls, right? College women, in my mind, they're so young that these poor girls—they spent their whole life getting to a level where they can compete at a championship caliber level against other females, and now they're being robbed of that opportunity. It's just not fair. And then, yeah, you throw the biblical worldview thing in, and it's like, okay. But even without just general secular society ideas of fairness, it doesn't even pass that test. It's fascinating that this has become the phenomenon that it has.
Right. But this is a faith debate, so we should really want to focus on why it is this way. I mean, because everything comes back to God. And when you eliminate God out of the culture, then there is no standard of morality. Well, why is that fair? This other person, this other man feels left out, so that's not fair to him. So you can make up all sorts of reasons why something should be fair. Life is not fair. It all has to come back to God.
Well, without God, everything's a social construct.
So exactly.
Right? So this idea that, I identify as a woman.
There's no right or wrong.
Says who?
Yeah. What's the basis of right or wrong?
There's do you identify as a woman? Why don't you identify as a blah, blah, blah? That's not right. Even a word, but it's what I identify as. Like, I mean, you're all random molecules bouncing around with no meaning or purpose.
Exactly.
Right? So, speaking of that, what is the purpose of marriage?
The purpose of marriage is to really imitate what God had planned for us, okay? He has male and female, and as he is going to marry his bride, the church, he has made an example of us, male and female, being married and having a family and taking dominion over the world.
So it's a picture of God's relationship with us.
And
the relationship
to have children and to populate the world. A man and a man cannot have children. A woman and a woman cannot have children.
And what is the very first commandment given to humans in the Bible? Not the greatest commandment, which we all know is love God and then love your neighbor is the second greatest commandment, but the first commandment, chronologically, the very first commandment ever given is to be fruitful and multiply, fill the earth.
You cannot be fruitful if you're married to the same sex.
So there's no way to have, biologically anyway, to have children and multiply unless you use marriage as this design. Well, yeah, they're just living together, they're not married. Well, God commanded it to be in a construct of marriage, but he does say be fruitful and multiply. That's the very first commandment. And it's one of the most important things that we're supposed to do on Earth. I don't care if you think the Earth is being overpopulated. First of all, you're wrong. Studies don't show that. They say we're about to have a population giant decline. But God said to be fruitful and multiply. Therefore, do so.
And spiritually speaking, it gives us, particularly in a Christian context anyway, it gives us a picture of spiritual reality as Christ and his church, you know, the bride of Christ. And he is a faithful husband, if you will. And husbands are to be, human husbands are to be faithful to their wives and to love and care for and provide for. And then the church is to be of service to help Christ advance his kingdom. He doesn't need us to, but he chooses to work through means. And so we have a role in that. And so there's a relationship between Christ and his church that we see pictured between a man and a wife, particularly in a Christian marriage. And it's the kind of thing when I'm doing marital counseling that I remind them, I tell the wife, I said, look, you are to behave the way the church behaves to Christ, and you, husband, are to behave the way that Christ behaves towards his church. And the church loves her Lord, and Christ loves his church. So you need to love each other and serve one another. And the other thing that's important there is the church isn't God. So God's got his place.
And neither is your pastor.
And the church has its place. And you don't flip those places, right? Christ has his role, and the bride of Christ has her role, right? And the bride should never try to be the bridegroom, and the bridegroom isn't going to try to be the bride. Like, we have roles and distinctives within those roles. We need to understand that it doesn't mean that men are just because they're bigger and stronger and faster, generally speaking, than women. I mean, there are some women that, you know, are way bigger, faster, and stronger than me, for instance. But on the whole, men are going to be, doesn't mean that men are better.
They're different.
They're made different, and they have different purposes. And there are some things that, I mean, women can give birth to babies. That's pretty cool. Does that make them better than men? Well, they're better at giving birth to babies, but they're not better on the whole. They're just different.
And that's hard work, and that's a lot of pain. There's a comedian I saw that was just saying, hey, if men were the ones that could give birth only, there'd be like six of us, because that's the only six men that'd be brave enough to actually have a baby and all that pain that endures.
And so back to the churches and the pastors and how to discern and things like that. So what is a pastor's reaction? When somebody comes in and asks these questions, how can a pastor react? Because what are there's like three or four different or five different whatever ways that a pastor can take somebody in. You know, one is, well, I have a new possible congregant, a new source of money, or that's one. Or I have a new congregant, a new source of somebody new to disciple, and I don't want to scare them off without actually having a chance to build a relationship. That's number two. Number three is, you know, I don't want to get in trouble. I don't want a whole bunch of people, boycotting this church and making trouble for my flock. That's the third one. So how does a pastor actually react? So one of the things is a pastor has to have faith in God and not in himself and not in anything else. If he has the faith in God, and that's foremost and the most important thing, then he should react and say, well, I'm glad you asked that question. Can I ask you why you're asking that question? Do you want to know what God says? Or do you want to be appeased and have a place that you can have your view? Because if you want your view, this is not the church for you. If you want to learn about God, let me tell you what God says. And that's really, I think, the way a pastor should address that question. He should not fear the person or fear reprisals or a lack of another source of income for the church. He should really, truly just love the person but say, hey, why are you asking that question? Do you really want to know what God says, or do you want to know, are we going to accept your views and change for you?
That's Imran Razvi. The other voice you're hearing on the show today is Daniel Razvi, and I'm Troy Skinner. This is The Faith Debate on News Radio 930 WFMD. We've got, you know, 5 or 6 minutes left in today's show, and one of the most poignant and important things that was said over the last, however long we've been, 20 minutes now, was what Imran Raz just shared about. It's about God. Make the focus, the prominence is on God, who he is, and what he says, what he thinks. And there are too many pastors. I actually was listening to a podcast the other day. I can't remember what the pastor's name, but he was making a similar kind of a point. And he talked about he learned a lesson when he was a younger pastor. You know, he was affected in ways that he shouldn't have by what he heard from the congregation. So after a sermon, you know, somebody would come and chastise him and say, "How could you be so stark and uncaring?" And challenge people like that and beat them up, and you know, like, that's not very loving. You know, you shouldn't be a pastor, and it would bother him. Or, you know, sometimes the same sermon, somebody would walk up to him and say, "Man, we came here needing to hear the word, and we were so discouraged. And boy, you really challenge us in the way we need to hear, and the Spirit moved through your words today. And I just want to let you know I was blessed greatly by it." And that would affect him. But he came to a place where he finally realized, "I can't be worried about what these people think or what they say. I just have to be obedient to God, to His word, what He says. And what would God have me do? What would God have these people hear?" And so if you're a pastor, we have pastors, I'm sure, that listen to this show at least on occasion. If you happen to hear this portion of the show, tell them the truth, right? Give them the Bible, and God's word never returns void. So if they turn around and walk away, okay, I mean, God's sovereign, He's in control, and at this stage in that person's life, that's what's going to happen. But you have to be, and if that means your church is going to be tiny, you're going to have a church of less than 100 for the rest of your life, okay. And if you're going
to
have
that's
a church,
actually a plus, by the way. We'll get to that maybe in a little bit.
Yeah, or if you're going to have a church that ends up growing exponentially and you start planting a whole bunch of other churches as a result or something, okay. But that fruit is coming from God blessing what you're doing, but you didn't do that. That's the point. Like, you're not going to make – that's the big problem. We mentioned Stephen Furtick, I think it was last week's show, the guy in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. It's a big mega church, right? Hugely impactful in a worldly sense. He has a huge amount of influence on, unfortunately, on people and pastors and churches. But he's not growing the kingdom. In fact, we'd be better off without him, without those pretenders. And the people that want to have their ears tickled and they want to come to a church and have the pastor say to them what it is they want to hear – the church, and not just your local church, but the church, the, you know, global church, is better off without those people pretending to be Christian. That's part of the problem we're in right now, is too many people call themselves Christians that aren't, and it's because pastors aren't telling them the truth from the Bible kind of thing. Anyway, that's a bit of a soliloquy.
And I think that is really the true meaning of taking the Lord's name in vain. Not cursing and saying GD or whatever, but it's more of, hey, I'm proclaiming to be a Christian, and I'm leading people astray. I'm not following Christ, but I'm saying I'm a Christian. That is taking the Lord's name in vain. I think that is really what God is frowning on and counseling against.
And we have enough time to bring up this. I don't think there's a whole lot we're going to say, because I'm sure we don't disagree about it at all. But I think it needs to be said in the context of marriage and what churches should be advocating for. It's really, really important, one, because God says so, but also, just practically speaking, I've seen it happen. Being unequally yoked is a problem.
Yes.
You know, so if you're a believer and your idea is, well, he or she isn't a believer yet, but I know if I marry him and work on him, they're going to be, don't do it. It's a mistake, one, but it's a sin, too, right? God tells you not to be unequally yoked and you go do it anyway. You know, you're sinning against God's word. Now, if you're already married and then you experience conversion, well, you don't run off and get divorced.
No, God commands you to stay with
right.
that person.
You work through have that. You. But if you're not already married and you're not a, now, I can say there are times when you might think the other person's a believer, and so you get married, and you come to find out a few years later your wife gets converted, and you're like, I thought you were already a Christian. I mean, we don't know these things for sure, but if you have every reason to believe, and that's why you want to have a council of people to weigh in and help you determine some of these things. And I think that's ultimately those classic wedding vows. You know, if anybody has any reason why they shouldn't get married, you know, speak now forever, always hold your peace. I think that's one of the main reasons why that's in there. Somebody can say, yeah, they shouldn't get married because that bum's not a Christian. And she is. They're unequally yoked. And I, in good conscience, can't just stand here and abide this. No, they shouldn't. Like, and then a good pastor like, oh, wait a minute, what? You're not a Christian? I thought you were. Right. You know, I think that's part of it. So we can talk more about some stray tales on things that we didn't get to this week. I brought up the idea of kinism. I do want to talk about that. And we touched on divorce, but we didn't really talk about divorce. We probably should spend a little bit of time talking about that, because that's something a lot of people, unfortunately, are dealing with and wrestling with, either in the moment or in the after effects of it. So anyway, Daniel and Imran Razvi, Thank you so much. I'm Troy Skinner, and thank you for listening to The Faith Debate on News Radio 930 WFMD. Find us online at WFMD.com or householdoffaithinchrist.com. We'll continue again, as long as they keep having us back, next week, 167 and a half hours from right about now. Till then, God bless.
Past editions of this program are available in the audio vault at WFMD.com.